Shabbat Shalom. In addition to celebrating the wonderful simcha of Norman's second bar mitzvah this morning, for my family personally, it's a rare opportunity to have our two older children and their spouses and their children all together for Shabbat. Now I know what it takes. It takes Norman Gerson's second bar mitzvah. But it's a treat for us, and also a wonderful opportunity for me to cherry pick one of them to offer the drasha this morning. So it's a great pleasure to welcome my daughter-in-law, Rabbi Sharon Bar Skolnick. Those of you who are on social media may know her as the co-creator of the wonderful Fun with Flames series. She is a gifted educator and rabbi and a wonderful thinker, and I'm delighted to have her offer words of Torah this morning.
I remember when Hillel and I first got married, living in our spacious and yet somehow cramped apartment on the Upper West Side, and how Fridays, we didn't have class at the seminary on Fridays, were spent mostly running around shopping and cooking for Shabbat. I would leave early in the morning, probably 9 was early then, and start at Fairway down on 74th Street, and get everything we needed and have it delivered to our apartment where Hillel would be waiting to receive the delivery. I would make my way to other kosher markets and specialty stores and then eventually get home to start the cooking. I would cook all afternoon, but then, aware of the time, I would jump in the shower, get dressed for services, and somehow be ready to leave exactly when it was time to go. I remember how after shul we would either go to friends' houses for dinner or a host. It was fun and relaxing and such a lifetime ago, such a different reality from Friday at our house now. Now Fridays still start early, but 6 is a good day. Still contains some running around and lots of cooking for Shabbat. Since I try to do only one major cookathon that can propel us through as much of the week as possible. Side note, my children will eventually learn to love leftovers and will stop asking me what's for dinner and understand that it's the same food from Shabbat eventually. But as Shabbat quickly approaches and I'm aware of the time, there is never a chance for me to shower, rarely the ability to get out the door to shul at the time we are supposed to leave, and rarely hosting friends for Friday night dinner. But we have our rituals, and our new Friday night traditions are definitely something special. Hillel and I do our best to wrangle our 3 children. Many of you here who know us so well know or have at least heard of our 3 adorable kids, Daphna, who's 8, Liav, who's 6, and Hadar, who is very, very 2. But lest people falsely think that rabbis' families don't have the exact same drama at the dinner table that everyone else has, you can think again. Sometimes they sit nicely, hold their kiddush cups without spilling, and listen to Hillel or me sing kiddush. Sometimes they ignore kiddush, having mostly their own side conversations and arguments, hitting each other, crying, squeezing each other's hands too hard, or playing with toys at the table. Sometimes they sing along, each one as a different farm animal. No, really, they do. But right before this fun and silliness, one of my most favorite moments takes place, where we place our hands on each of our children's heads and bless them. In this moment of blessing, each child mostly knows to stay still and accept the blessing being offered by us. And we quickly say the words and kiss each one on the head as we finish. In our house, as I know is true for many others, we bless them in age order. Daphna, being the oldest, always gets blessed first. Liav is always 2nd, just another reminder of his middle child status. And Hadar is always last. Although Liav seems to have accepted this reality, Hadar, each week, reacts both with confusion and frustration, wondering why she always has to be last. She says, "Can I be first? Can I be first now?" And lately, we've tried to appease her by repeatedly saying yes you can be first to go last. While this whole scenario is pretty cute, there is something greater than an adorable 2-year-old at play here for me. As we recite the words of this classic blessing for our children, I'm continually struck by the words that comprise it, as well as the meaning behind it. Lucky for me, the words appear in this week's Parsha, and at the kind offer of my father-in-law, I took the rare opportunity to dig a little deeper and see what I could uncover. Parshat Vayechi, while focusing on Jacob's imminent death, actually focuses much more on blessings. Jacob recounts the blessings he has received in his own lifetime from God, as God said to him, "I will make you fertile and numerous, making of you a community of people, and I will assign this land to your children." Feeling overwhelmed by the blessings he had received in his own life, Jacob, as Israel, calls for his beloved son Joseph and Joseph's children, Menashe and Ephraim, so that he may bless them before he dies. The boys come over to their grandfather Israel, and in his aging state, he seemingly doesn't recognize them and asks Joseph, "Who are these kids?" He then intentionally misplaces his hands on the children, with his right hand on the younger son Ephraim, and his left hand on the older son, Menashe. Although Joseph tries to correct his father, Jacob attests that this seeming error was in fact a purposeful action. He calls on God to bless the boys and prays that in them may my name be recalled and the names of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and may they be numerous on earth. And Jacob declares, by you shall all of Israel invoke blessings, saying, Yesimcha Elohim ke Ephraim v'chim Menashe. May God make you like Ephraim and Menashe. At least that's what we always say on Friday nights when we bless our boys. May God make you like Ephraim and Menashe. But seriously, that's the opening to the blessing that we give our boys? Why? Why them, I'm wondering? Why Ephraim and Menashe? What did they do that was so worthy of being the beacon of light, the standard of blessing that we hold our children to each and every week? Why not may God make you like Moshe, like Abraham, like Joshua? And for our girls, may God make you like Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. But why? Yes, of course, they were our four matriarchs. They were important. But each one was complicated and had little to no relationship with God. Complicated relationships with their husbands and families. Why them? Why not Miriam? Why not Deborah? So now that I've hopefully gotten you close to as riled up as me about both the language that we use and the characters that we bless our children through, we can all dig a little deeper together. First, we have the blessing itself. Throughout the Torah, when people receive a blessing, the blessing either comes unsolicited from God or from one person to another. Some blessings seem to be earned or given as rewards, while others are anticipated or expected, and others are requested. Today, we almost toss the word blessing about in more of a casual way, saying bless you when someone sneezes, or my favorite Southern expression at the grocery store, y'all have a blessed day. But for our biblical heroes and heroines, a blessing, when given from one person to another, was, in my opinion, an attempt to manipulate or guide someone's life path. It was often a hope, a dream, a wish for the future. And when God offered words of blessings to various people, I believe it was God's way not of foretelling the future, but gently and omnipotently nudging God's children in a particular direction. Since we strive to be partners with God, not just to throw our hands up throughout life's twists and turns, demanding that God fix problems with magical solutions, we are instrumental in bringing about the fulfillment of our own blessings. A blessing, in essence, then, is an opportunity to create your own self-fulfilling prophecy. We don't wait for God to make blessings come true. Rather, we utter the words and we do our best to create blessed moments in our lives. We must be the blessings. We must make our lives a blessing. When Jacob blesses his grandchildren, Menashe and Ephraim, he says, Yesimcha Elohim ke'Ephraim b'chimnashe. And we always translate this word as make. May God make you like someone. But the Hebrew is pretty clear here. That word does not mean to make, but rather Yesimcha means to place or to set, as in, may God place you like Ephraim and Menashe, or may God set you or set you up like Ephraim and Menashe. There is a big difference here. I don't know that I necessarily want to bless my son that he should become just like Ephraim and Menashe. Frankly, I don't know enough about them to make that decision. It was hard enough for me to pick out names with Hillel for our children when we actually wanted them to emulate characteristics in people that we loved or admired personally, let alone pray for them to become like strangers and biblical characters that we know very little about. But when we look closely at the Hebrew of Yesimcha, I see far greater possibilities. Praying that God set up our children in a similar way that Ephraim and Menashe had been set up in this moment is something I think I can get behind. You see, these two young boys, Jacob's sweet grandchildren, the children of his beloved and favored son Joseph, were almost like clean slates, blank canvases with lives as of yet not crafted. When Jacob looked at them and asked, "Who are these kids?" I don't believe he was confused. Yes, he was aging, and yes, he was not quite as sharp as he had once been, but he was clear on who they were. He corrected Joseph when he tried to move his hands from the youngest to the oldest, saying that he knew what he was doing. When he asked who they were, he must have been asking about who they were to become. Jacob must have seen in them all the potential for goodness and greatness that he had seen in his other children, but most specifically Joseph. Joseph, despite great odds stacked against him, rose not just to a life of greatness, but of goodness and compassion. And as he lay dying, Jacob prayed that his grandchildren might be set up to live up to their potential, to have the cards stacked in their favor, and to have God guide their paths and protect them, just as their father Joseph had been cared for throughout his life. And when we pray for our girls, Yesimech Elohim Kesara, Rivka, Rachel, Velea, I'm not praying that God make them just like our matriarchs. I don't want them to have the same struggles with childbearing, marriage, or even with family dynamics and internal drama. But I do pray that God might set them up as these women were set up, with the ability to shape their own destiny at any age and at any stage, with power to stand up for themselves, to speak out, to communicate with their husbands, and to pray to God. In each case, these women did everything within their means to use their power to control the lives they wanted and deserved. And God heard them and ultimately provided for them, and together, as partners, their dreams became reality. And so, when our kids fight over who gets to be blessed first, we'll remind them and ourselves that it's not a race. It's okay to be last, and it's okay to be first, and it's okay to be in the middle. Everyone will be blessed in their own time with the blessings that are intended just for them. We pray that they might be set up like Ephraim and Menashe, or like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, and that God grant them the ability to live blessed lives, fulfilling their potential for greatness and goodness, and with the power and ability to shape their own destinies. Kenei Ratzon.